the last day of June. Slipping by. No, no. I mean, I love July. But you know when the July 4th weekend arrives. The summer is pretty basically gone. That's it. Putting the beach chairs away. Towels, the sunblock. Hey, welcome to Insight. My name is Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network. Hope you're doing well. But it's true, though. The 4th of July weekend is a great weekend. And the weather in the New York City tri-state area looks phenomenal. But I rest my case. Because once the 4th of July is here, it's gone. Warp speed. I mean, you know, the summer flies by so quickly as it is. Anyway, I'm looking forward to my barbecue on Saturday. And you're all invited, by the way. All invited, no matter where you live. Across the pond, wherever you are. Just don't bring any styrofoam. Going to be talking about that. San Francisco is so progressive. I love them. They're the first ones to ban plastic bags in the United States. And they're doing so with styrofoam. Very, very cool thing. We're going to hear about a great new movie, a documentary called Swim Team. And Lara Stoleman is the producer and director. She's going to be joining us in a few minutes. And learning so much about three individuals with autism and asking the question, what would you do if your community gave up on your child? And it's about parents of one autistic boy who take matters into their own hands and form a competitive swim team consisting of multi-ethnic autistic teens, training with them, expectations, and zero pity. Love this movie. I can't wait to talk about it. Lara Stoleman and Swim Team coming up in a few minutes. Always love to hear your input. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And, of course, are you watching the Olympic trials? Very fascinating, right? Congratulations to Michael Phelps for not getting a third DUI this week. I'm just kidding. Hey, I take my hat off to him because he's a very, very accomplished person. And he has ADHD. And I wanted to point that out again because a lot of people overlook that. And you should overlook it because it's not that pertinent, but also it shows what's possible, though. So that is very pertinent. We're going to talk about the Paralympic trials. Every week between now and the Olympics and Paralympics in Rio, next week starting, we're going to have an athlete or a coach on to talk about the Paralympics because I am a huge fan of the Paralympics because I've said this repeatedly throughout the years because I think the Paralympics are sorely overlooked. I think they need to be first, not following the Olympics, because when people watch, bring it down to a smaller scale, like Special Olympics, which actually our swim team movie is focused on, but locally, Special Olympics, people go to watch Special Olympics. It's never been involved in that kind of a platform or event and find it so, so amazing. It's incredible. So when you see the Paralympians compete on such a national level, it is just incredible on so many levels because you see people without arms, without legs, without vision, without hearing. There's so many different avenues and or limitations. But these limitations are turned into something so powerful that they're able to do and kind of reinvent themselves or propel themselves further and higher and stronger and faster in the mental capacity, in a physical capacity. And it's just amazing. So I hope you, well, the other thing is they don't make it easy for you to watch the Paralympics because not only does it follow the Olympics, and by that time you're always like burnt out because how much time have you dedicated to watching TV and the Olympics, right? A lot of time. So I imagine that with the Paralympics airing like in the middle of a night, you know, that's kind of a bummer. They don't make it really easy. So I would like to put out to the sponsors, and I'm going to try to get some people on the show between now and Rio, that we can actually ask them, why do the Paralympics follow the Olympics? And I know why, ratings, etc. But listen, I think they need to give it a chance. I think they need to stream it live, or at least preempt it, delayed, so it's at least on the internet for this upcoming Rio Olympics, Paralympics, and see what the results are. I guarantee you, if it's actually marketed well, it'll do well. And what a great platform for sponsorships. I mean, Nike, Under Armour, you name it. I mean, there's a plethora of sponsors who would get on board because you know why? And I actually differ okay, I call myself, I technically am disabled, but I don't call myself disabled because I don't feel disabled. But people with disabilities kind of get a little ticked off when they say, well, you know, it's a story, it's a feel-good disability story. But the reality is, I don't care if it's feel-good or not. If it's getting coverage via the media, that's a good thing. If it's couched as like a feel-good, fluff, fuzzy, you know, story, so be it, because I just think coverage is coverage and it's important. Yeah, I know sometimes it's, you know, covered a little bit too, you know, like, you know, kumbaya-ish. But, I mean, that's the reality. So that's where we're at. So if we can get this material out there, because there's so many backstories, you know, like Michael Phelps' story. All these Olympians have great backstories that are filmed like a year ago and they're all produced. So when we're watching the Olympics and we see somebody like an athlete like Danica get up on the swimming blocks or the track, who's going to run a marathon or the 100 yard, they could say, well, she reigned from a town in New Jersey. She started maybe swimming at the age of three. Who knows? I mean, there's perfect examples. And they're really, really compelling. So now if you introduce people with disabilities, they have equally incredible stories. And their incredible stories don't really, well, maybe for some find the backstory about how they became disabled. Maybe they were born disabled. But I find it more interesting what they've become. Because when I speak to audiences about overcoming adversity, it's not so much, okay, yes, we all have to cope every day. We all have to get out of bed. We all have to brush our hair, select clothes, whether you're blind, visually impaired, don't have arms or legs, all the above, above the knee amputee, below the knee amputee, colorblind, list goes on and on, diabetic. So the reality is, what do you do with that? Do you sit on the sidelines of life and just say, hey, man, I have a disability and it's too difficult for me? Or, you know, I say it defines you. What you do with your disability defines you. Right? Does that make sense? Oh, I think I saw a head shaking out there somewhere. Exactly, right? So I really want to get into that. So in the forthcoming weeks leading up to Rio, I will have either an athlete on or someone associated with the Paralympics. So if you know anybody and you listen to the show on a regular basis, any Paralympians, please get in touch with me at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Mark with a K and Mark Farrell, F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. So as I mentioned to you at the head of the show, I'm not like a save the world kind of guy, but I'm totally into, hey, I got two young kids, 3-year-old and a 7-year-old who's actually in a studio. I forgot his name. What's his name?
Luke.
All right. Luke is here 2 weeks in a row. Luke is my producer, and then we have an assistant producer. Then we have an executive producer in the studio as well. All with the last name of Farrell, man. It's a real family affair, this show. I don't hug trees, but I'm all about conservation, big time, because, hey, listen, whatever we can do by not using the plastic bags in a store, conserving water, you know, we all have to do our part, because number one, it costs money. And number two, it's, you know, it's our children's future, et cetera. And it just makes complete sense. So last, probably about 2011, San Francisco was the first city in the United States to ban plastic bags. And I bring this to your attention, not so much that I made headline news. Actually, it kind of did. But in front of me, I hold in my hand a styrofoam cup. And this cup is because I didn't have a choice of using a paper cup. But I always choose to use paper cups, unlike Dunkin' Donuts. Sorry, Dunkin' Donuts. But the reality is styrofoam takes about 100 years or so to break down. And when it does break down, it breaks down into very small particles. And then guess what? It ends up in oceans. And who's in oceans? Nemo? Like Finding Nemo, right? And then you get styrofoam swimming around with Nemo. Do you think Nemo wants to eat? Danny, do you think Nemo wants to eat styrofoam? No, definitely not. No, not good for Nemo. So it's great that San Francisco is being very proactive. A lot of states and cities, high-profile cities. As a matter of fact, New York, I think, is still in legislation or something's coming down the pike. I'm sorry, I'm not totally up to speed on that, and I should be, so shame on me. But it's going to be implemented in 2017, so, you know, all those annoying popcorn packaging items that you find in your boxes which I still have in my foyer in my house because somebody opened a box the other day and they're kind of all over the place. So those will be gone, a thing of the past. And remember those, when we were growing up, those coolers that were all made of styrofoam that worked for like 10 minutes until someone just sat on it or leaned on it too hard, or actually was just a little bit too inebriated and just was too forceful with it. So bye-bye styrofoam. So happy to see that. Let's see some other states following suit. So as I mentioned also, 4th of July. It's America's birthday coming up. Huge, right? Well, it's kind of interesting timing because after 9/11, MLB, Major League Baseball, said, you know, let's make this game in our country with a very clear understanding. We understand that we were all very more patriotic and more unified as a nation, as a people, as a neighborhood, community, state, you name it. Said after the seventh inning stretch or during the seventh inning stretch, how about we play God Bless America? And now, even if you're an atheist or whatever your religion is, that, you know what, it's kind of a, I just used this word a few minutes ago, but kind of a kumbaya thing. And it's cool. It makes people feel like they're healing, like they can be whole, especially in a unified place like a stadium where there's 20 to 50,000 people or so. So that's been happening since 9/11 or shortly thereafter. And it's kind of cool. Now, what a lot of people get confused about, and I don't want to insult your intelligence because you guys are smart. You listen to the Progressive Radio Network with Gary Null, who's in the other room listening to the show going like, I can't believe how terrible Mark Farrell is. But just give me some time, Gary. I'll improve. I swear. I will practice like crazy, okay? Anyway, so the reality is, no. God Bless America is not our national anthem. You knew that. I know that. But a lot of people mistake it, and they take off their hats, and they stand up, and they put their hand on their chest. And that's all fine, but that's not necessary. But apparently a lot of people, and I guess it's getting whittled down to the MLB, feel that it's totally unnecessary, and it's burnt out. And it's kind of a sad thing to hear that people are burnt out of God Bless America. And I didn't know the backstory of this, but it's kind of neat because it was actually written by Irving Berlin, who thought it was kind of maudlin. And so put it in a drawer for like 20 years. And then his friend Kate Smith, you know Kate Smith, who is very known for what? God Bless America, said, listen, I need a patriotic song for my radio show. He goes, you know what? I got something for you. Here, let me open this drawer. Opens this drawer and goes, you know what? I think I need to change a line or two from you. So I think there's a line, the ocean foaming sea, something like that. I think he threw that in there. A feel-good fuzzy line and another line. But pretty much for intents and purposes, that was the song. So that's how Kate Smith kind of really, really got on the charts and stayed there and forever will stay there. So Yankee Stadium, and for all the Yankee fans out there, they still play it every game. Mets, kind of put it in the back burner with the majority of the league. They play it on Sundays. So I guess it's kind of fitting because God bless America on Sunday and holidays. But, you know, I don't know. I think it should stay. That's just my opinion. I think it's kind of a cool thing. If you don't want to stand, you don't have to stand. It's not the national anthem. It's not the Star Spangled Banner, which we all know and love. And certainly that would never not get played at an event. Actually, interesting, on a sidebar, I actually attended an event recently, and I had a guest on the show, so I don't want to say the name of the event. But I was really surprised. It was a New York event. There was about 3,000 people there, and it was a long event, too. It took over 8 or 10 hours. They did not sing the national anthem. No. I was kind of surprised about that, and I will give my input about that. Okay, so finally, before we meet Lara Stoneman and her incredible film, Swim Team, Michael Phelps. So last night, Michael Phelps, he became the first male swimmer to qualify for 5, not 3, not 4, 5 Olympics. How incredible is that? Let's hear from Michael Phelps, everybody. Yay, Michael. Good for you. As a matter of fact, I got to take a victory sip for you, Mike. Now, Michael, I know you had 3 DUIs. I mean, 2 DUIs. This is just T, okay? I'm on board with you, man. You're in recovery, so am I. And congratulations on your child, by the way. Another clap for Michael. Hey! His son is named Boomer, and he's got an impending marriage. Things are really looking good for Michael. But last night, I started thinking about, you know, Michael did not have it easy. And a lot of people don't have it easy. But, you know, this is one of the reasons why I do this show, because, you know, when I'm talking to audiences at schools and colleges and corporations about overcoming adversity, and my life story is pretty kind of colorful and riveting. I don't say that, but other people tell me they are. his is no exception as well, because he was diagnosed at a very, very young age with ADHD. I mean, his mother said Michael may not have loved swimming at all were it not for the ingenuity, basically, of his mother, Debbie Phillips. At seven, he hated getting his face wet, so his mother would flip him over in the water and taught him to backstroke because he didn't want to get his face wet. Well, pretty clever, right? So I guess he showed some swimming prowess on his back. Then I guess they got him to roll over. And in between, he was getting it. He was really into it. And in the classroom, you know, he was kind of floundering. His inability to concentrate was a big problem, which was kind of my problem as well because I couldn't see the chalkboard. But I digress. So Debbie, Michael's mother, was told by one of Michael's teachers that he couldn't focus on anything. So Debbie consulted with a doctor. Then he was nine, Michael. He was diagnosed with ADHD. So Debbie, who had taught in middle school for more than a couple decades, she started working with Michael very closely to get him extra school help that he needed. But after he kind of kept grabbing at a classmate's paper, Debbie suggested that he be seated on his own table. When he moaned about that, he hated reading, hated math. She realized that, you know what, I need to make things in alignment of what he likes. So, okay, if he doesn't like math, let's put the math around sports. Like how many laps is, or how many, if you do 250 meters, how many is that total? 100 meters, et cetera. So she made things kind of on the same platform of things that he liked. So that really went over with Michael. And when this is very interesting, when Debbie Phillips was approached by a teacher and would say, Michael can't do this, I'd counter with, well, what are you going to do to help him? That's what every parent should say to a teacher, to administrator, to a principal, vice principal, whatever the case may be, because they're there to help our and your children. So a lot of times I feel like the onus is put on us. And sure, as parents, it is our job. But it's also our job to be on top of the educators, certainly in a polite, well-intentioned manner. But they're there to be educated. We're paying good money for that, whether it's in a private school or a public school, and you're paying good taxes for that. But, you know, I really take my hat off to Mrs. Phelps, Debbie Phelps, and certainly to Michael, because there were all kinds of signals that he would use, because when he'd be on the deck, they call that the deck of the pool, when he would start getting very anxiety-filled, et cetera, because he had AD hyper deficiency as well. Sorry, hyper anxiety. His mother would make the letter C for compose yourself. So then Michael would get all soothing. So, of course, when you jump in the water, if you're not familiar with like competitive swimming, it is very, very, when you're not actually in the competition, it is very soothing. Just doing laps in the pool is very, very soothing. So I just think I wanted to bring that to your attention because, yeah, it's very cool that he's going for a fifth Olympics and everything, but you have to really embrace him for just everything that he's overcome. And it's still, I'm sure, a battle because maybe he can't even think about it. And I'm not giving him excuses for driving while intoxicated, but maybe there's something there, or maybe he was just kind of not feeling as strong confidence-wise because he did have some setbacks between now and the last Olympics. But that's okay. We all have setbacks in life, right? Every one of us do. I have. I'm having one today right now. I almost knocked over my tee like three times. My shirt's on inside out. Well, maybe it's not. Oh, the tag's on inside out. Maybe the tag is on the wrong side of the shirt. Anyway, always love to hear your input. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And I'd like you to hear from the youngest member of the Farrell family, and she's going to be coming over here. Hello, Miss Danica. Can you come over here, please? Yes, yeah, she's over here. She's coming over here. She's going to tell us a little bit what she likes to do, because what our next guest is going to tell us about is swimming. Do you like to swim?
Yeah.
What do you like about swimming?
Backstroking.
Backstroking? That's excellent. Can you do me a favor? Can you say to our listeners, you're listening to PRN?
PRN.
And we'll be right back after this.
We'll be right back after this.
Good job. We'll be right back. It's Insight. What the hell are you doing listening to this show? Don't you got better things to do? More compelling people to listen to than Mark Farrell? I bet you do. But if you're tied down somewhere and you're listening to me, thank you very much. Always here on Thursdays. Love to have you along. So for our international listeners, if you feel like having a good old party this weekend, birthday party, America's party, come on over. It's New York City. We got plenty of room for you, right? Yeah. Come on over. We still got some flights. You okay over there, my guest?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. All right. So listen, I gotta give thanks very quickly to Michelle Spitz, because Michelle Spitz, I met a few months ago in New York City through a mutual friend, and she's become a dear friend, and she's just introduced me to some incredible, trailblazing, creative, heartfelt people who are just driven to improve the lives of people in the world we live in. What an introduction, huh? So, and this doesn't, no exception here, because I work with a lot of people with disabilities. I speak at schools and corporations and colleges, as you know, and there's nothing like impacting anyone's life. But when you impact a person's life with a disability, it just makes you feel and them feel so incredibly valued. And that's priceless. So without any further introduction, she's the producer and director of an incredible new movie, Swim Team, documentary film, Lara Stolman. Lara, how are you?
Hi, good. Thanks for having me, Mark.
I felt like we prepared for this like 6 months ago. I had a look for my, I'm like, I knew we had a conversation, but oh my God, it was like an eon ago, you know? So you are quite accomplished. A news writer for MSNBC, NBC, you name it. Very, very vast background, awards. But what made you want to take on a documentary about autism?
Well, yes, Mark, it's true. I am a television producer and a filmmaker, but I'm also a mom, and I have three kids.
The hardest role of all.
And one of my boys is autistic. And I was actually not looking to make a film. I was actually looking to find a swimming program for him. And in trying to find, you know, it's not easy with, you know, a child with a disability and, you know, specifically autism to find recreational activities for them.
How old is your child now?
He's nine now, but this was a few years ago. I think he was 6 or 7 when I was looking for a swim program. And swimming is important for children with autism because drowning is actually
big concern.
I think the leading cause of death for children with autism.
Children in general too.
It's a problem. Yeah. So we really wanted him to learn how to swim, and I was looking for the right program, and I came across this incredible group of people that were putting together a Special Olympics team for their kids with autism.
And the first clip we're going to hear is actually from one of the founding members of the team and a very, very, very vital part of the film.
They're all autistic. So that's the common denominator for all our athletes, which is not very common for a swim team.
25 freestyle, you're going to flip the wall, backstroke coming back, okay?
Okay.
All right, here we go, 2 laps.
My husband and I started our own swim team for our son, who's autistic. Then the word got out. Parents telling other parents, and we have 17 kids right now.
1, 2, 3,
go! You gotta swim!
Let's go, Rohit, come on!
Swim!
Move your arms, Rohit, come on, you gotta move
up. A lot of these kids don't have friends. One time or other, all of our kids have been ostracized. And for them to be a part of a team is unbelievable.
So that was the voice of Maria McQuay, and one of the coaches, and the husband, Michael McQuay.
Yes, it's a couple who have a son on the spectrum who's on the team, and they volunteered, and they were able to actually get their local Y to donate the space and some of their staff members to coach for free, which is actually really important in our particular story, because this takes place in Perth Amboy, New Jersey, and it's a community largely of low-income families.
Very working class.
And they wouldn't necessarily have been able to afford a swimming program for their kids if it wasn't free.
Well, thankfully, they actually have the facility there. That's a huge portion of this whole equation here.
It's interesting, too, because the YMCA in Perth Amboy is pretty nice. And this pool is
good.
It's beautiful.
They deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it made for lovely scenes, actually.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get to the great editing and a great scenery, because cinematography is huge in my world and certainly for yours as well. But more importantly, so you get your son enrolled, and when did it dawn on you, wow, there's something really here. There's a great message that needs to be told, because not only do these three kids that we're going to be talking about that you focus on in the film, but people on a national level, and hopefully for your sake and for everyone's sake, on an international level, can see and embrace and learn from this.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, just to be clear, my son was not on the team. He didn't join the team, because I knew immediately, as soon as I met these people, that this was a film. And I also knew I didn't want it to be about me and my family.
Well, I respect that.
But I knew immediately it was a film, because I was so inspired by them, not just because I'm the mom of a son with autism, but I just felt that they were motivating me in a way that was incredibly galvanizing. I was so impressed that they saw in many ways, I think, you know, when you have a child with a disability, you get told no a lot. And I certainly have been told no a lot. You know, no, my son can't be in the regular class. No, he probably can't keep up on the Little League team. And we had that in common, and they had heard that a lot about their child. And it can be very disconcerting, and I had become jaded already, even though my son was, I think, only 7 years old. But
well, that's a long time to deal with a disability and an uphill battle.
Yeah, yeah. But what was so exciting for me is that they decided, you know, despite all the no's, that they were saying yes. And it was, you know, like a switch went on, you know, in my head, that what they had decided to do was say yes, we can do something for, you know, for our son. We can get other families together that want opportunities. The majority of the kids on this team didn't have any other swim team they could join. You know, they hadn't participated in competitive sports at all. And I know I have typical children as well, and we live in the suburbs, and just that notion of not, you know, your children not participating in sports, you know, is it's unheard of.
And then you introduce the level of having a disability, and it makes it even more disillusioned for a parent to have a child with a disability, and makes it feel like them another part of life where they can't fit in.
Yeah.
And for me, that was huge, because having a visual impairment, I couldn't do a lot of things, or I tried out for the basketball team. I made it, and I had to quit a few weeks later because I couldn't trace all the basketballs all around. I had to make up an excuse. Or when we would play another sport and my skin was so bad, I was so embarrassed when I had to take off my shirt because I had bad acne. I mean, I just made up all these excuses. So I certainly understand and empathize with a lot of kids with disabilities and adults, because it's just another way they feel like I'm different.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, you know, because you've played some sports, that when you're playing on a community team or a school team, it's not just about playing and the competition. It's about socializing. It's about being part of a unit and part of a community. And that those are so, you know, important things in our lives. And all of these kids and these families were missing that. And the families, is, you know, the families missing that for, you know, their lives is part of the story, too. You know, I found in following the families in my film that the parents got so much out of being able to come together and meet other parents at the practices and share information, get advice, and just feel like they were part of something too. So it wasn't just that their kids were missing out on all the benefits of sports, but the families were missing out.
Well, absolutely. As a mother with a child with a disability, you sometimes feel like you're on an island.
Absolutely.
And so when these islands, you can tie off on each other for a while. That's great. I mean, yeah, besides a plethora of information, but just knowing that there's other people out there like yourself who are confused, and sometimes you just want to bang your head against the wall. But then sometimes you can create an outlet like this, and the storyline focuses around three swimmers, Robbie, Michael, and Kelvin. So tell me how you decide to focus on those three individuals and their stories or backstories.
Well, the team started off with, I think it was 17 kids, and it was a really diverse group, diverse ethnically and, you know, diverse in terms of their the range of their disability. Although everybody was on the spectrum, you know, there were some kids that had second disabilities, like Kelvin, for example, has Tourette's, not just autism, but Tourette's syndrome. And what I did was, something that's pretty common with documentary filmmakers is I actually followed a bunch of characters to see
who was going to.
I mean, there were certain factors I was looking for. One important factor was who was available to me.
Sure.
Who was returning my phone calls. Who was going to let me come to their home.
I imagine
and film.
It's a big commitment.
Yes. And not
intimacy,
everyone.
Privacy.
Yes, and not everyone was interested in that. So I had to eliminate kids and their families if they weren't open to me, you know, coming to their homes and, you know, coming to their schools. And because I knew that was important, that I wasn't just interested in being at the pool.
Of course.
Wanted to, you know, find
see
out
their
what
life outside
going
the
on
pool
their lives. Yeah, so that was a big factor. And then the other, you know, the other thing was I was looking for, you know, who has interesting turning points in their lives right now, you know, that would help us get more color on, you know, the issues of raising disabled children now in our country. And, you know, I found out pretty quickly that the transition years, this time when kids are graduating from high school or they're going to post high school programs before they lose their supports from their school districts.
Kind of time out.
That this was a time that was causes a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress. And people say it's like falling off a cliff when you lose support from your school district.
The reality really sets in. And as a matter of fact, this is probably a great time, Laura, to insert a great piece of audio from Robbie's mother. It's Robbie. The scene is set with Robbie on his bed and his mother in the room. And she tries to have a candid conversation with him about being autistic.
Why I chose Robert to join the Hammerheads is because Robert doesn't know right now that he has autism. It was a way of telling him, I never sat down with Robert and said, Robert, you have autism. I don't want to break his heart, but he needs to know. Robbie, do you know what autism is?
No.
No. Do you see yourself different from other children?
They're different.
No, do you see yourself different from the regular kids in school?
Yes.
Do you think that you know why you're different?
I don't feel like it.
You don't feel like what?
Talking about those two.
You don't want to talk about why you're different?
Yeah.
Okay, but one day you want to know the truth, right? Why you're different?
Because I don't want to know.
That's from the movie Swim Team. Lara Stoneman is my guest. She's the producer-director of this great documentary. That scene is just heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
I got chills watching it at 3 o'clock in the morning last night. I just got chills again because for so many reasons. Because, you know what, I don't want to put any words in your mouth, but I want to hear, as a parent with a child with autism, how did that make you feel?
Well, that was an important scene for me because I think about this a lot. I think that it's important that our children learn how to advocate for themselves because we're not always going to be around for them. Mm-hmm. And when I met Rosa, she told me, you know, pretty soon after Rosa's Robbie's mom, who we just heard from, she told me pretty soon after I met her that he didn't know that he was on the spectrum and that she knew it was important that she told him.
And he's probably around 17.
Yeah, he was about 17. He was going into his senior year of high school, and he was starting to spend more and more time out without his family, with other people. And she didn't know how to break the news. And the reason why she wanted him to be on the team was so that it would help her. She thought it would help her and that it might clue him in to be surrounded by other kids that were like him. And it did.
And it appears that it's a real breakout position for him, because we're going to hear in our next clip where he actually kind of, I'm not sure if he's the captain of the swim team, is he?
Well, it's interesting. It kind of became a self-fulfilling prophecy. Okay. He started calling, he and Michael, the oldest, strongest swimmers, started calling themselves captain.
Great. Co-captain?
Co-captain,
great.
Yeah.
That's the coach's son?
Yeah, Robbie and the coach's son.
Well, we're going to hear in this clip, because it obviously gave him a lot deal of confidence.
I know that I'm going to become guardian from Robbie. He will not be able to live on his own. He will still need to live with me.
Did you have breakfast in school this morning?
No.
Okay.
He's in the 11th grade, and he's at a fourth grade level. There's no resources for these kids. They talked to us about we will send him to Walmart so he can learn how to stock. They're not giving him the skills, and they're not targeting where it will help him maybe get a job and something that he has a passion for.
Look, guys, we need a meeting. We need a meeting. Look, guys, if you want to get medals, you have to do it what we do. So you have to follow what me and Mike does. So you have to follow the captain. But we're not boss. We're teaching you how to be faster than a kiss. So you want gold medals? Not bronze. You want gold? You have to work hard for this.
He talks about being a coach one day and teaching others how to swim. It's finding the right resource for him and someone to work with him.
You turn it loose, right?
That's right, Robbie. Go for the gold. Good for him. You hear that confidence? I love that.
Yeah.
You must have been like ready to jump off the ceiling, right?
It was really exciting to see. That. It was really exciting. He really emerges as a natural leader, during the course of the season. We filmed for a whole season, a swim season.
How long is this season?
6 months. So okay. From the day that they started practice, their first practice, we were there on the very first day that they were coming together as a team.
And how different are the swimmers that you followed?
The characters?
Characters, yeah.
Well, there's the main characters are Robbie, who we just met, who doesn't know that he's autistic, Michael, the son of the coaches, and Kelvin. And they are pretty different. Kelvin, I mentioned, has Tourette's, and he has a lot of he blurts obscenities. He has vocal tics as well as
don't
body tics.
Don't we all want to blurt obscenities? My God, on the way in this morning, I had a plethora just waiting in queue, but I had to contain myself because I was with my family. Anyway, go ahead, Laura.
You know, it's funny. He says a lot of the things that, you know, we're thinking and that we probably want to say, but that's his condition.
What
is
a
that
bad
he,
effing
he,
shot that was.
He has to say it. Sure. He can't help himself. I personally find him really endearing and lovable. I think that the Tourette's makes him, just a lot of fun. So he's a really interesting character. And Mikey is also very interesting and different. What is exciting about Mikey is ultimately, where the swimming takes him. Each of our characters actually have really, I think, satisfying, as we say, stories and arcs in the film. And they all come together because they swim together on a relay team on the swim team.
And I cannot believe how, and not because they're autistic, but because they're young as well, but they are really good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Powerful. I mean, they would blow me out of the water.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons why I knew right away that this had to be a film, because I was just really struck by the juxtaposition between what these guys are like out of the water and what they're like in the water. In the water, you just can't tell that they're different. You can't tell at all. And some of them are really have really special talent. You know, Robbie is actually on his high school team, and he's also on an elite swim team. This is his third team. He swims on three teams. But, you know, when you go home with him, that's where you see with all three of these guys, that's where you see what they're struggling with, what their families are struggling with, you know, how they are excluded for the most part from participating, you know, with typical peers. And, you know, they just don't have opportunities like this.
And Laura, I want to go back a moment to what you were saying, because I had a quote that I thought was written down. But again, being visually impaired, it could be right in front of me. I can't see it. There was a great line. I think it's from Robbie, where he says, "Swimming makes me feel whole or normal," or something like that.
Yeah, Mikey says that. He says, "I'm not like other teenagers. I'm autistic. When I swim, I feel normal."
Yeah. Wow. That's great. I mean, we all feel that way whenever we do something in life, whether it's editing a great film, doing yoga, seeing a good friend you haven't seen in a long time, those things that just kind of make everything in the world go away for whether it's 5 minutes, an hour, and it makes us feel whole.
I think that word normal like can be controversial. And
yes.
I think that when he says that it means swimming makes them feel accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can all relate to that. And everybody wants to, you know, on a certain level, be accepted and be part of their community.
Oh, sure.
And that's I think what he means by that.
That, in addition to swimming, takes a lot of focus and concentration. Swimming's all about form.
Yeah.
And it requires a lot. So then you can't think about maybe what the guy in the other lane is thinking about, or how you're being judged, or your flip turn because you have autism, or whatever the case may be, because it takes so much, you know, physical and mental control.
Oh yeah, it's so impressive to see, you know, these boys and what they, you know, how much they've been able to excel. Very impressive.
And not only did your story chronicle the swim team season, but I think you did a real extended justice by showing post what happens to these swimmers a year later. Fill us in, please, without giving too much away.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but what we've been saying, you know, in talking about the story is that their success, you know, in the water really translates to success out of the water. And we see how they're really able to achieve more some more inclusiveness in their lives, more inclusion because of this experience, that it really does, it does have results.
And it further underscores that people with disabilities are no different from anyone else. Isn't that what we all want?
Yeah, to a certain degree
or need to, you know, varying degrees. But, you know, when we focus and we get what we want and it makes us feel good, I teach spin at 5:30 in the morning. I should talk to my therapist a little bit more. But the point is, the rest of your day, the tone is set. Like, your acumen is more spot on. You know, the blood flow, so you can think clearer and you have better ideas. You're an ideas person, obviously. And for them and for everybody else, it's just all you want.
Yeah.
So going into this film, and this is a very long project because obviously I believe your pocketbook was open for a long time, right?
Well,
you were self-financed.
For the most part, I did get some grants.
Yeah.
Which
New York
I'm
Times
very happy about. New York Times gave me some money, which was nice. They commissioned me to produce a short for them, which is on their website, mm-hmm. actually. And I got some money from New York Women in Film and Television, Lorene Arbus, who's a great patron of the arts, and specifically of the arts about disability.
Sure. Karma Foundation.
And the Karma Foundation, which is also a wonderful foundation that supports autism and
well, with a name like that, you got to be pretty wonderful, right?
Disability-related endeavors. And I am so also grateful to Michelle Spitz, who's going to be doing the audio description for this
film. She's phenomenal.
Hasn't been
done
yet.
And what a great set of pipes she has.
Oh, and she's going to do the closed captioning, which is
fantastic.
Really important. So this is going to be accessible, which I'm really happy about.
Reach even a greater audience,
yeah,
which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It just speaks volumes on who's out there, who wants to see this, who needs to see this. And by making a film more accessible, you know, the ripple effect, the concentric circles will go on and on. And I love to see that because, you know, personal stories like this and his Special Olympics of New Jersey, Mark Edenson, the president, I imagine open up, you know, vast doors for you to have access to these incredible athletes.
Yeah, we needed that access. We needed the cooperation from the Special Olympics, and they were great in, you know, welcoming us and opening the doors. And, you know, we also got great access from the YMCA. They were helpful. And Goodwill. We filmed a couple scenes, important scenes, actually, at Goodwill in New Jersey.
Now, unlike many news stories, you know the ending when you're doing all the projects that you're writing. But documentaries and feature films, they change. You change because you can't help by changing. Certainly as a parent with a child with autism, your perspective changes, your experience change, and throughout the course of a year, things happen. So how did the vision change, and how the movie film, the documentary film change in that time period, if you can do it in a minute or so?
Yeah, it was just the big process was figuring out who the main characters are, because you don't have enough time in a film to profile, you know, 17 kids. Although I loved all of them and I wanted to. So that was really how much, you know, the most change was winnowing down, you know, who the story is about, and figuring out, you know, when to end it.
It's always the hardest part, right? Starting is easy,
yeah.
You know, and making it end with either people wanting more or with a call to action, of course, is always kind of the trick, right? So as a parent with a child, and I keep saying this because people are obviously tuning in, tuning out, and listening to the podcast. If you're not listening to it at the complete portion or duration of this interview, I want people to understand the importance and significance of your background and with your creative background. What do you think, how is our government doing in terms of providing finances and or outlets and platforms for people with disabilities, especially with autism?
Well, we've come a long way, you know. I mean, we no longer send people with autism off to institutions, you know, mm-hmm. in general. And that's but I still think there's a long way to go in terms of, you know, including people with developmental disabilities in our communities. And it's unfortunately, people with autism specifically tend to be more unemployed and more isolated than people with other disabilities. And they tend to live with their parents and be cared for by their parents. And,
especially after they age out after school, correct?
Yeah. And I'd like to see that change.
How much funding is available typically for someone who's maybe 21 years of age and like Robbie? What is Robbie? And you don't have to give away the film, but what is someone like Robbie? What are his options options?
Well, it's not a lot, unfortunately, because institutions of higher education have not opened their doors to kids who can't, you know, perform on standardized tests and just need to be approached a little differently.
There are a few schools out there, very small, but very pricey, that exist out there because I have spoken at them, but few and far between.
Yeah. And then in terms of jobs, yeah, I mean, there are some companies that are opening their doors now to people with autism and developmental disabilities, but there aren't a lot of them. And they don't exist in every state, in every community. There's a lot of work to be done.
Well, hopefully this film will change, start opening more doors for that. Swimteamthefilm.com, swimteamthefilm.com. Lara Stolman, thank you so much for your time. I imagine this film, it's gotten great reviews. You won a few awards. And
we're not done.
And you're not done.
It hasn't been released yet.
Oh, when is the release date? And how can people see the trailer? On your website, right?
So, yeah, you can definitely come to my website to find out more about the film,
great.
And we'll update you.
And sign up on the mailing list, et cetera.
Yeah,
and get the downloadable and DVD and all that jazz, because I want one of those. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for sharing your Thursday with me. Happy July 4th. America, happy birthday. If you'd like me to speak at your school, corporation, etc., I'm at markfarrellmotivation.com, markfarrellmotivation.com. And if you're in the area, head out to Coney Island and see how people can slowly overdose by ingesting way too many hot dogs by nitrate poisoning. Have a great day.